Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of different places on the internet. We are live right now on Crowdcast, also over on YouTube. If you prefer an audio version, this isn't live, but that's okay. It's on iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher. Wherever you get your podcasts, you check out Comic Book Club and all of its related podcasts. Please do it. Now, folks, we have an awesome show for you tonight.
Woo-hoo!
In a little bit, we're going to bring in our guest, the legendary Dave Thomas, to talk about his new book. But first, a couple of quick things, a couple of orders of business to get through here.
Yes.
First of all, I wanted to give a big shout out right here at the top of the show. I wanted to give a shout out to two of our Patreon members and good friends, John George and Ari Dorian, who have been incredible supporters of the show for a very long time. But also, they have been the stewards of the Patreon movie night for years now, I think, at this point. They have hosting pretty much nonstop screenings over the pandemic for everybody in the Patreon. It's been really fun to see. They've been having people vote on it. They totally took charge of it in a really big way, and they're absolutely, absolutely amazing. We love them so much, and we appreciate them.
Thank you, Aaron and John.
Just announced in the comments that they're going on a little bit of a hiatus with the movie thing because I think they watched way too many horror movies in a row. Totally.
Yeah, it's too many. October.
It's too much.
It's tough. Mm-hmm. It's tough.
You got to take a break and then gear up for the nonstop Christmas movies in December. That's how it works.
Oh, boy.
We're healthy people is the point.
But thank you to both of them so much. They are awesome and we love having them on board and all the things that they do. Next up, something that we've been talking about quite a bit here. We've been challenging all of you to challenge us in the iTunes comments to either read and review a book or to give us a question for our audience questions later on the show. We've read some great stuff because of that. And we've got another comment here that I wanted to read. This is from Hive Mind Comics on iTunes. Not every great work of art starts off with a bang. Sometimes it takes a minute for the artist to get their footing. An example of this is Alan Moore's legendary run on Swamp Thing. I first tried reading the series, I struggled through the lengthy prose of the first trade and then let it set on my shelf for a few years alone. Luckily, I finally gave it another shot, and it is now my favorite run in all of comics. Unlike Alan Moore's slow burn masterpiece, Comic Book Club is immediately great. These guys are at the peak of their craft, true masters of the form. A more perfectly formed team cannot be found in any comic book. They always bring fresh takes on the big books and make sure to highlight the smaller books that other comic sites and podcasts neglect. They understand when a series needs some time to figure out its pacing and long-term structure. That's why I'm confident they will read the second trade of Alan Moore's Saga of the Swamp Thing.
Buttered us up.
Now
you're going back in for more.
We did this last week on the stack. We reviewed the first volume of Saga of the Swamp Thing, and Pete, you were a little mixed on it, right?
Yeah, let's bring that up again. Or we could, start a show. You know what I mean? Like, let's move
anyway,
on.
We have been challenged by Hive Mind Comics to read and review the second volume of Saga of the Swamp Thing. So we're going to do that on next week's Stack podcast. In the meantime, if you want to challenge us to review a book, maybe not the third volume of Swamp Thing. Totally fine.
We're really going to
carry it up a little bit.
There's
there are
other
comic books out there.
Just saying.
I mean, I've already read them, so it's like when a teacher challenges you for homework that you've already done. I appreciate it.
Regardless, we'll definitely do that, but leave us a comment in iTunes, and we will review some stuff. And last but not least, Stray Bullet, our resident CBC chef, has been curating a drink every week from the Gotham City Cocktail Book. This week, Justin, you're the only one with a habit. I kind of messed it up. So you want to cue up what we're drinking here?
Yours exploded?
Yes, it did explode, and then I poured it into a glass that was not properly cleaned. There were just like coffee grounds floating up. It was gross. I don't even want to talk about
what
it.
What are you doing? Grounds? Do you live in a garbage?
I am a raccoon. A raccoon. We know this.
Yeah.
It's true.
And let me throw out here.
You only have one glass?
I don't know. I made two. One for me, one for my wife. My wife's glass was clean, and it really took the wind out of my sails when I saw the coffee grounds float up. So I gave her drink. And I just grabbed myself.
I can't imagine what was floating in hers. Is she okay?
Yeah. I don't know. She started bubbling at the mouth, and that's the last I saw her. I was like, got to do a podcast.
See ya. I got to go.
The last I saw her. A couple of coffee grounds should never deter you from drinking a drink.
That's true.
Fair enough. This drink is gin, just like a gin fruit cocktail, which is nice with some bitters. It said fresh pineapple juice, something I can't imagine making. squeezing a pineapple? What are you, some sort of Hulk?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So that is not, I have fresh orange juice, fresh lime, and a little bit of classic canned pineapple juice.
And some Folgers crystals on top? Like, what did you
do? Of course, a light dusting of coffee grounds and one loose used Band-Aid. It's perfect.
Oh, that's so gross.
Sounds so good. Well, that's great. Very excited about that. We are going to bring in our guest now. As mentioned, he is a legendary comedian from SCTV, among many other things. And he's a new book out called The Many Lives of Jimmy Layton. Ladies and gentlemen, Dave Thomas, hello.
How you doing?
Welcome.
Hello.
So good. So good to see you. So excited to have you here. Now, this new book, you work with Max Allen Collins, who we had on the show a couple of weeks ago. How did you get set up with him? Was this an idea you came to him about? Did he come to you? Was it just batting around ideas? How did it happen?
Well, actually, Tom Kenny, SpongeBob, introduced us.
Classic.
Of course.
Classic meet cute. And that's Tom's how my wife friend. And I were introduced by Tom Kenny.
Were you really?
SpongeBob and no. The cartoon SpongeBob introduced
us. That would have been pretty cool, I got to say.
Yeah.
So I've known Tom for years. And I don't know, this came out of Comic-Con, and Tom said, I got a friend who would love to talk to you, and he's a famous writer. He's written, you know, Road to Perdition, among other things, and Dick Tracy and Mickey Spillane stuff. And I said, oh, great. And he said, so here's his phone number. If you want to call him, call him.
I
was curious, and I just called him, and we ended up getting along really great on the phone. And he said, what are you doing now, what are you working on? And I said, and I brought this up because a show that I had pitched to a couple places and thought, nah, this isn't gonna fly. I'll write it as a book. So I started writing it as a book, and I told Max about it, and he said, well, how far did you get? I said, I got about three chapters. And he said, well, can I read what you got? I said, sure. Wow. So I sent it to him. And he read it. And he said, I love this. He said, I'll help you get a publisher. I'll help you get a book agent. But what I'd really rather do is write it with you. And so I thought, well, since he's written over 100 novels and I hadn't written any, I thought that's kind of a win-win for me.
Yeah.
I like those odds.
Yeah. So I said, sure, let's do that. And then COVID hit. Mm-hmm. So I'd planned to go to, he lives in Iowa. I was going to go to Muscatine, Iowa, and he's going to come here, and we're going to kind of switch off. Well, we ended up writing the whole thing on Zoom and, you know, on the phone, and Max got the book deal for us, and then we just started working through it, you know, and got it done, and then next thing we knew it was done, and then I had to think of something else to do.
That's the problem with accomplishments.
Yeah.
What was the process like for you when you two were working on it? Was one person typing while the other was throwing out ideas? Did it go back and forth?
So I had the basic premise of it launched from the first three chapters. Mm-hmm. But what we added to it, I thought was really smart, which is I basically had a sci-fi story about a guy that gets transported to another dimension, to another version of his life. And it's based on the work of Hugh Everett III, a Princeton physicist, who came up with this concept called, oh, what happened? Oh, my book popped up. The whole screen changed.
What a coincidence.
I thought I'd pushed a button and something had gone wrong here. Anyway, so this physicist came up with what he called the many worlds interpretation. And essentially, his take was that for every binary choice in life, an A, B choice, you come to an intersection, you could go left or right. So you go left. Hugh Everett III said, the right turn, the road not taken, still exists. And all the consequences of that exist in a universe that we just don't see. We're not in it. And it's like the famous Schrodinger's cat experiment, the cat in a box thought experiment by Erwin Schrodinger, that the cat is both dead or alive until you open the box, and then the act of observing it determines the state, whether it's alive or dead. So
yeah,
I thought, all right, as an entry into a sort of interdimensional story about a guy that gets to experience different versions of his life, this is a good sort of a sci for the sci-fi part of it that I could sort of do some research on and see if I can make this work. Then when Max said he wanted to do it, I said, you know what would be great is if we added a kind of a mystery element to it that people would go, oh, that's why Max Allen Collins is doing it with Dave. He's a famous mystery writer. So we came up with that. So our story is about a little thief from South Boston who is on the run from a Vietnamese drug lord. He owes him $5,000. And he runs across the river. He takes an Uber across the river to Cambridge, Massachusetts, from South Boston. And he steals a Harvard sweatshirt, blends in with the students. He's good at that. But he needs money. So he breaks into a house, but he picks the wrong house. It's the house of a physicist from MIT who's conducting a quantum mini worlds experiment in his basement. And our lead, our hero, Jimmy Layton, connects the wrong quantum cable to the wrong gizmo, and next thing he knows, he's holding a steering wheel in Chicago, in a car in Chicago, 1,000 miles away, in another version of his life. So at the same time that this happens, somebody in the house that he broke into shoots him in the head and doesn't kill him. He goes into a coma. And this actually works for the many worlds interpretation, because, you know, the detractors, the guys who, the physicists like Max Planck, who argued that Hugh Everett III was full of shit, and this is just a stupid, fanciful thing. It can't be proved.
We talk shit about Max Planck all the time on this podcast. We're always after that dude.
Well, anyway... He came up with what he calls the Copenhagen interpretation. And basically his theory was, if you go left, the road not taken, the right turn collapses. That universe collapses at the point that you make the left-hand turn. And there's certain logic to that. So in order to confirm or test the hypothesis of the many worlds interpretation, somebody would have to kill themselves. It's called quantum suicide. At the point of the intersection to be able to experience the road not taken. Well, that's a difficult thing as a scientific method, because how do you come back and present your results to the detractors?
That's the biggest problem, is coming back and doing a PowerPoint.
So we thought, oh, this solved my problem of how does Jimmy hop from one version of his life to another instead of just parking in one alternate reality. And the reason is he isn't dead yet. So he's coming phasing in and out from this version of his life to another. And these versions of his life are all sort of similar, meaning that he doesn't go off and become the president of Argentina or anything like that. In one life, he's a soldier. In one life, he's a boxer. In another life, he's a priest. They're all sort of things that a little thief from South Boston could have done in his life if he had just made slightly different choices.
Yeah.
So that's it. And the way Max and I worked it out was, he said to me, well, let's beat out the outline together. And then you take the first pass at each chapter and I'll do my pass afterwards. And then we'll get together and kind of butt our heads and figure out what the final draft of that is going to be like. And so that's the way we did it. And I had a lot of fun with him and it was a great experience.
Well, it comes across in the writing, the way the storytelling happens, and it's really worth the ride and all the turns. It's a fantastic finish to a really cool idea. So congratulations. It's a great read.
Oh, thanks. That's nice. That's really nice to hear, because you never know. You're at your keyboard and you're going, I don't know, maybe this is good. You know, you don't know. You know, and I'm used to television and film where I get immediate feedback from the network or the audience. Somebody's telling me my stuff is full of shit. And so I know I get instant feedback. This book thing is different. You know, you write it and then you send it out there and then feedback starts to slowly drift in.
Yeah.
And I'm on to the next thing. It was just like, sure. Oh,
exactly. You can't go back and change it. So that's a hard thing, hard change.
Do you, you were mentioning at this beginning that this kind of started as something else on the TV and movie bent. Now that you do have the book, do you feel like that could potentially be a little more proof for a TV series or a movie or some sort of pitch? Or do you look at it as the book, that was the experience, and that's kind of it?
Well, you can always be hopeful that there'll be another incarnation of what you do. Mm-hmm. But if you're not happy with what you've done, you're screwed. So I'm happy with what I've done, what Max and I did here. Now, might there be a television series or a book version or a movie version of this? I don't know. Maybe. I mean, the publisher with Neotext is famous for setting up those kind of links with their writers. So that's good. But, you know, when I originally conceived of this, I come from Second City, which is sort of writer-performer background. And so I always kind of wrote and thought my stories out from the point of view of the actor playing it. And when I came up with this idea, it struck me as, oh, this would be great as a TV show for the actors, because not only does the lead, Jimmy Layton, get to be different versions of himself, but all the people in his life get to be slightly different versions of themselves too. So in one life, his girlfriend is married to his best friend. In one life, he's married to her. In another life, she's
great.
Maybe a lesbian, you know. I mean, whatever the bear. And we had a bunch of choices and things like that that we had to kind of pare down. And then, you know, but I thought as a television show, this would be an actor's delight because, you know, you could put a little ensemble, like a repertory company together who would play these different characters each week that are just, they're basically the same, but slightly different and fun, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, mentioning the SCTV stuff, obviously you're really well known for Bob and Doug and all the other things there. Do you feel like there's an expectation at all when you're doing your first book, like, well, it's going to be a Bob and Doug book, and then you come out with this, which ultimately I think is better and it stretches and it seems like an exciting, very different idea. But have you heard or do you feel that pressure at all?
No, I honestly don't. And here's why. First of all, that's 40 years ago.
Yeah. We get that. Hard to feel that pressure from back then.
Don't you think?
Yeah. It's like me being pressured from my like first spanking. Being like, well, I don't really feel it too much anymore.
So, I mean, I can look back on that and say that was fun. We had a great time and we enjoyed it. But, you know, I've done so many different things since then that, you know, I mean, I was on a sitcom for 5 years. I was a staff writer on some drama shows. I created a game show. Shot 144 episodes while I was doing Grace Under Fire. You know, yeah. I've done movies, I've done film, I've done pretty much, I had an animation company for 10 years. So, you know, I've done just about every kind of entertainment thing that I could do and not the book. I mean, I wrote a coffee table book, the SCTV behind the scenes book, but that's not really a book. It was mostly pictures and, yeah. And it was really perfect for my writing ability at the time. You know,
I think honestly, I have that in my shelf over there somewhere. So
you got it?
Yeah, I do. Oh. It's somewhere over there. It's definitely lost, so I can't find it immediately. But I remember enjoying that book back in the day. So even with the pictures, still a good book, but not quite.
I had a lot of pictures. And the fact that I'd hoarded all those pictures paid off with the book. Because I was able to send those out and just kind of like, here's some pictures. I'm kind of short on the words, but here's some pictures.
You mentioned
working across all those different genres and types of project, like what keeps you moving and which do you sort of want to land back in on?
I usually fear keeps me moving.
Yeah, good.
The comedian Steve Wright had a great line that I think describes me perfectly. And that was, how did the fool and his money get together in the first place? Which I thought, when I heard that, I went, oh, that's me.
Pretty accurate.
So, you know, I've always just kind of blown my money on whatever was handy at the time, you know, and not always intelligently. And then yeah. I need to get another job. I need to come up with something fast to pay the rent. So I'm still doing that. And so I can't stop. I'm driven by fear and driven by the need to pay my bills.
I think we all feel and understand.
Yeah, I got that. Look, I'm working in a basement right now. Like, right. I'm clearly up against.
Yeah.
I did want to ask you about one item on your resume. You mentioned you worked on a bunch of drama shows. I didn't know this initially, but I was surprised to learn you wrote for 2 seasons on Bones. Is that correct?
Yeah.
How did that happen? How did you end up
getting
worked up with 3 seasons?
I joined them. I wrote. The show creator is a friend of mine. And I was sort of like between stuff. And I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do next. And he said, why don't you try to come up with 5 really interesting ways that somebody could be killed? And I said, okay.
No problem.
So I did that. And I sent him an email with my 5 ways that somebody could be killed. And he said, why don't you write a script for our show? I said, okay. Now, I didn't really even know the show. So I went in, I met with the writers and sat in the office for a while. And then I pitched my idea of a bizarre way that somebody could be killed. And and then I wrote that script. And they said, would you consider joining the staff as a consulting producer and writer? And I went, yeah, actually I would. And I'd never done that. I'd never been staff on somebody else's show before. And I had a really good time. That was one of the best creative experiences of my life. I loved that room. I loved the people in it. And I loved the cast and had a great time, you know, working on that show. And it was really, you know, forensic anthropology was not something I knew really anything about. So I really had to dig in and research that, you know, learn the 206 bones in the human body so I could use them.
So you could break them?
Yeah. So you could shatter them with projectiles and things like that. That would be clues for the people and the detectives on the show. And it was great. I had a great time. And then I went out and did The Blacklist after that. And that wasn't as much fun. But it was an interesting experience. And,
Are you still jotting down creative ways for people to be murdered occasionally?
No. No, but I do have a dark side.
Yeah.
And most of the stuff I come up with is pretty dark. I've got a thing I'm pitching with one of the writers that I became friends with from The Blacklist, a guy named Dan Knopf. He created that show Carnival.
Yes.
And he's a really interesting guy. And so we came up with a really dark show that we're pitching right now and trying to sell. And we're you know, I got another thing I'm working on with my son that we cool. pitched to a few places. We pitched it actually this week to to a company. Oh God, I've gone blank on his name now. Played a hitman with a clown mouth, Sam Rockwell.
Yes.
And they really liked our pitch, so we'll see, you know, if that has a home there.
Awesome. There's a couple of questions here. I'm sure you get this all the time, but a couple of questions in the comments. Stray Bullet says, when is Strange Brew 2 coming out? And then Kevin says, given that Strange Brew is an adaptation of Hamlet, what would Strange Brew 2 be?
There is a script for Strange Brew 2 that never got made. And it was called Homebrew. And the concept of the script is that where we were still very much in the reality of Bob and Doug as the two presentational characters that had their little show and did direct address to camera back in 1980 when we did Strange Brew, 82. We needed to be able to turn the cameras around sideways and shoot these characters in their lives and find out who their friends are, what their lives are like, and why, as mature, older, grown men, they live together without wives. You know what I mean? And not turn it into like some sort of a sexual thing that we didn't really want to deal with.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, at a wedding to one of their friends, Bob, Rick Moranis' character, brings his beer and everybody loves it. Says, this is fantastic beer. He said, you know, and one of the guys who I had got Dan Aykroyd set to play this character is a guy named Rick Ripple. And we have tremendous respect for him as Canadians because he's American, and you know they're just made for success. The Canadians aren't. And he says, you know, you should start your own brewery. That's what you should do. You should brew this beer and start your own brewery. You can make a fortune, and you'd be part of the monoculture, which is, you know, everybody goes to the same McDonald's, the same Burger King, the same Starbucks, wherever you are in the world. It's like the monoculture. It's big corporations and everything's kind of the same. He said, let's be one of those companies. Let's not be the customers. Let's be the sellers. And so a bunch of them put their money together and fund a brewery, and it all just goes to shit. And they end up burning down their own brewery to get the money. And ironically, the financing and the sort of project, the whole thing of doing that sequel went almost the same way that the story in the brewery did. The financing
burned down.
Everything went to just went south so fast. Oh. And I personally lost a ton of money. Brilliant financial moves. And
sorry.
And ergo, where I inherited the claim to Steve Wright's line as a sort of a, you know, my headstone epitaph. Right. So that is the story of the sequel to Strange Brew that never got made and probably never will now.
Painful memory.
What was the other question that they had? Was there
Since Strange Brew is an adaptation of Hamlet, what would Strange Brew 2 be?
Okay, so it's not. I can tell you why Strange Brew was an adaptation of Hamlet, and that is that Rick and I weren't allowed to write the script because we were under contract to NBC, and we had a record that had broken and went gold and platinum, and then NBC said, we know you're going to get a movie offer. If you guys try to write your own movie, we're going to sue you. We have you exclusively. Ugh. So Rick and I hired a Hollywood screenwriter to write our movie, and we met with this guy and said, he said, well, what do you want the story to be about? And we didn't really know, you know? And I was an English major, and I said, I don't know. I said, why don't you make it Hamlet? I said, instead of a guy, have a woman coming home from school and she finds out that her father has been murdered or is dead, and she'll find out later he was murdered, and her uncle married her mother, and there's a brewery there where they make beer, and an evil brewmeister. Do that. So anyway, he wrote that. And then Rick and I read it, and it just missed the mark of the characters by a million miles. It was just not. But our agents at CAA thought, we got it. We got a problem.
Good enough script, for us.
That script went out on a Friday, and by Wednesday we had a movie deal.
Wow.
And so we had a movie deal for a movie we didn't want to do. And Rick said, I'm not doing this. And I said, well, why don't we just rewrite it? And he said, well, they bought the other one. And I said, they didn't read it. They didn't yet. This is Hollywood. I said, I know this. Because I'd written some scripts in California before, some movie scripts, and done Spies Like Us with Dan and other scripts for Joel Silver. And so I said, they bought the deal. They didn't buy the script. They bought the deal. We're on TV. We can promote this. They know that. The record is selling. They're going to just give us some money and just say, make whatever the damn thing, whatever you like. So I started rewriting it by myself. I don't know. I got to page 30 or something. And Rick came over. He says, let me see what you got.
Yeah.
And I showed it to him. He said, okay, this is funny. Yeah, we could do this. And he said, he just rolled up his sleeves. And we started working on it together.
So that's awesome.
We never really quite caught up to the draft that we had sold. We got about halfway through it with our rewrite.
Mm-hmm.
And then production hit. And we had to start shooting, you know. And I've always been very visually oriented. And I said, we got to get somebody really good to write, to do storyboards for us, because we don't know what the fuck we're doing.
Yeah, right.
As director,
we need anybody.
Because they fired the director, MGM fired the director and said to Rick and I, you're directing this. Oh, and Rick almost quit. He almost quit at that point. He didn't want to direct. And so I said, we'll get a really good storyboard artist. And I met this guy who you probably know, Paul Chadwick.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote
this
comic called Concrete.
Concrete.
So anyway, I saw some of his stuff, and he was really smart visually.
On the show.
But he was also a fan of the characters. That meant he got them. He would know how to do it. So I would sit with Paul and just sort of, okay, so at this point, two cop cars come in. Let's do a Spielberg-type shot where we have the bumper of the car just come in, wipe the frame, and then do this and do that. So somewhere between my sort of derivative ideas of other people's good movies and Paul Chadwick's good sense of what a frame should look like, we came up with storyboards that we stuck to fairly closely with what we shot, but we weren't ever able to really catch up to the story. So the Brewmeister Smith and Hamlet story stayed in and ended up playing out the back half of the movie, you know?
Wow.
That is wild. The fact that that is true and you're on our comic book podcast telling us about the comic book person working on it, it's wild. Truly, I grew up on the Canadian border of New York, and Strange Brew would come on, and we didn't know what we were watching. Hazy, snowy TV, and be like, what is this comedy we're watching here? And so it was truly like, it was an informative movie in my career, in my life. So that's awesome.
Well, there's one point where we left our dog at home in the movie, locked up. And we come home, and this was a really friendly black lab, and he couldn't growl if his life depended on it. So the dog guy, the dog wrangler on the shoot, would take two black elastic fans and just put them around his teeth and feed them through his fur so that his teeth were bared, but he was wagging his tail And he was so we tried to keep his tail out of the shot, but the joke was a real cartoon joke, which is we come home, we go, and we go to the shot of the dog and then added the growl in post, but and then we said, uh-oh, he's mad. And then we cut to the dog's POV, and it was Rick and I with big steak bodies. Like,
yeah.
Instead of our bodies, they were actual oversized steaks that we had the prop people build for. And that's a lift from the old Warner Brothers cartoon.
Sure, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And
Bugs Bunny.
I collected comics when I was a kid and loved comics. I grew up on comics. And comics were the sort of bridge between printed books and film, I think. You know, yeah. they gave kids, like Mad Magazine was a comic, essentially. And those writers that wrote for Mad were TV writers. They did TV parodies where, I mean, we got the idea for TV parodies for SCTV from Mad, because that's what they did. They did TV show parodies, movie parodies, and the writers that they had, Dick DiBartolo and Larry Siegel and Arnie Kogan and guys like that. I knew who they all were before we did SCTV, because that was how we grew up. So it's no mistake or not a coincidence that there's a kind of a marriage of comic book sensibilities in the work that I was involved with, because it was always there. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was always part of the thinking. We were making panels in our minds of things to shoot on SCTV and then shooting them, you know?
Wow. That's my love anyway. That.
Now, do you think you'll get back to comedy? Is there comedy stuff that's spinning in your head, or are you fully, it feels like you're moving into, like you said, this darker stuff, or just always expanding out into stuff you haven't done?
Here's what happened to comedy. comedy at the beginning of the dawning of the, what they might call later on the politically correct era, comedy took a real hit. And a lot of my friends who were stand-ups couldn't play universities anymore because they'd get booed off the stage by the woke, you know, politically correct audiences that were offended by just about everything that they said. And so they would get booed and barred and you can't come back. You're not welcome back here. And I just got to a point where I couldn't do the comedy anymore that I used to do. And so the stuff that I started thinking of was darker and, you know, like, for example, the show Barry.
Yeah.
I don't
know if you remember the show. Yeah,
for sure.
That's a comedy to me. I'm laughing my head off all the way through that. It's dark. It's about a hitman who actually kills people. But you never really feel bad for the people he's killing. And there's a sort of a detachment from the reality of the actual murders that makes it play and makes it acceptable. Yeah. So that's where my head is these days, as opposed to the kind of stuff I was doing back when I did SCTV. Now, are you getting stuff from people about our Burger King just arrived and we can't, we want to know what happened while they went to the door to get their Burger King? I saw one of those text messages on the bottom. Earlier, I was glancing down while we were talking and I saw this Burger King message where somebody said, I missed the beginning of the show because our Burger King arrived.
Yeah, they're here now though. They're all cut
out.
The
people are hungry. Exactly.
Yeah, they gotta eat, right?
They gotta eat. Sure.
It's around dinner time.
Dave, thank you so much for coming on. Yes, the Many Lives of Jimmy Layton is out now, right? You can get it anywhere. Love it.
Look at that.
Awesome. Thank you so much. There. It really has been a pleasure. Congrats on everything. Hope to read many, many more books to come.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Great talking to you.
All right. There we go. Once again, the legendary Dave Thomas. The book is called The Many Lives of Jimmy Layton, and you can get it absolutely everywhere now. It's very good.
Great read. And, you know, really nails the landing.
really just
plus Pete it. Famously not liking books without pictures, and this is that.
Yeah. It was one of those ones where I was like, God damn it, this is a fucking long book to read. But yeah, I was able to power through it and made it, you know, it was one of those page turners. So you wanted to kind of see how it's going to end.
Good for you. Bruce Wayne may appear to be a wealthy playboy, but beneath his facade, his true identity is that of the Batman, waging an endless war against crime. Join the Caped Crusader in Batman, The Audio Adventures, the first scripted audio original featuring Batman and his villainous rogues gallery in a world premiere story of life and death in Gotham City, debuting exclusively on HBO Max. Starring Jeffrey Wright as Batman and a who's who of incredible Saturday Night Live alums, this rollicking adventure, told across 10 episodes, is written and directed by Emmy winner Dennis McNicholas, includes devilishly delightful original music by Doug Bossi, and performances by Rosario Dawson, John Leguizamo, Chris Parnell, Melissa Villaseñor, Seth Meyers, Jason Sudeikis, Brooke Shields, Fred Armisen, and many, many more. Go to hbomax.com/Batman Audio Adventures for more and stream Batman the Audio Adventures only on HBO Max.
No, it's good.
And good for everybody out there, because we're going to move to our next section, because you all make it up. It's your audience questions. And for audience questions.
I'm on it. That's what you always say.
You are questions, all of you, I think. You can drop a question and ask a question over on
to make them up.
Crowdcast or over on YouTube. Drop it in the comments over there. We'll take a look. But first of all, we know what you are drinking, Justin, unless you've switched to something else. Have you switched to something else?
Yes, I have an Austin East Cider. Cider.
Nice.
Which I don't normally drink, but I was cooking with one earlier, and so here I am finishing it off.
There you go.
Cooking with the cider, you say?
Cooking with a, I was making a stew.
I am drinking a Lagunitas.
No, we had a hand in it.
Thanks, everybody. Little something ale from Lagunitas. It's also an IPA. It's pretty good. Very strong.
Alex, talking to comedy legends, really.
It threw me. It was very exciting. Those were some good stories. I was very happy about that.
Yeah. I mean, Pete, honestly, the Paul Chadwick thing is crazy.
I can't believe
I have that book. You know, like, that was good crazy stuff. That it was like, I'm drinking Voodoo Ranger IPA.
Good stuff.
Whoa, Pete drinking an Alex beer. Very
pretty
strange.
Much. Okay, we got a couple of questions here. This is from Joe Benton over on YouTube. Official audience question. Whenever you guys run out of your drink, how do you make another one? Mix it secretly behind the scenes?
Yeah. Sometimes you guys laugh at me because I'm being too loud, you know, when I'm like trying to stealthily pour vodka into a drink.
Yeah. If you were pouring a bottle of wine, it's the loudest I've ever heard. And I worked in restaurants for 10 years.
You were also, Pete, saying glug, 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 glug while you were doing it like a cartoon.
Yeah.
I usually make two. So I pour one for myself and then I have a second one sitting by. There you go. That's my big secret.
I'll usually start with the cocktail and then move on to some sort of beer or canned beer. And I've got another one on the tip over here.
Whoa.
Grapefruit IPA. Excellent. And let me just say, I'm coming off of a weekend in New Orleans. So I am tired of drinking.
I have an audience question about that.
Yes.
Yes.
Could you tell me what you ate when you went to Chef Brett Macris's amazing restaurant down in New Orleans?
So I was lucky enough. I mean, yeah, he might be the better person to tell you about it. But truly, I hooked up with Brett, went to his restaurant, Couchon, in New Orleans. It is amazing. Anytime, if anyone's listening here who lives there or is visiting New Orleans at any time in the future, please go there. It's so good. Great food across the board. Brett sent out some food. He sent out this fish. I think it was a Gulf trout. Correct me if I'm wrong. Brett, the golf snapper, with this sambal sauce on top that he had actually shared the recipe for with Nat, who's in the comments here on our Patreon Slack. It was unbelievable. I had a party of like 13 people, and wow. Brett truly rolled
rolling
out for
13
us.
13 deep, that's huh, awesome. Bro?
Yeah, it was a blast. We had a blast in New Orleans the whole time. We drank a bunch of iced Irish coffees from Aaron Rose, anything we could get our hands on. Had a nice cocktail, though, on Sunday night with Brett on my way out of town. Blast.
But what did you go in and, like, what did you order? Like, you said the amazing snapper that came out, but what did you sit down and order?
We ordered like everything, all the small plates on the menu. So that was my favorite.
I didn't
favorite,
ask for a flex on.
Oh my God. Just he ordered a bunch of stuff. What are you getting at, Pete? The garbage plate. He got the garbage plate.
No,
Jesus
did
Christ.
What did you ask for? Like, what were you excited
the
to eat?
The pork and bacon pie was the best. The oysters
this
were
is so
amazing.
Aggressive.
served in a chili oil sauce. Brett sent out some ribeye toast that were like so good. They do a special called the Couchon, the fried gator. Yes, that was very good. He's dropping menu items in the comments. The Couchon was this smoked ham that was just the absolute Aristotelian perfection of what smoke is. Oh, it was so good.
Did they have to throw you out because you didn't want to stop eating? Like, I don't know.
No, we ended up having to run out of there to get to the next thing we had to do, but it was excellent. And then
I don't know how you do another thing.
Well, that
go
sounds
to the
very exciting.
Restaurant, that's the thing.
What? Just calm down, Pete. Why don't we go to some questions about other things? This is from Nat. I didn't pay attention to the Disney Plus announcements. What are you excited about? Any trailers we should watch or anxiously anticipate?
We got a trailer dropping tonight that we were
yes,
going to talk
we
about.
Do.
So that's something to look forward to.
But the Disney Plus stuff, I think he's talking about Disney Plus Day was on November 12th. There was a bunch of stuff that came out there. It was pretty muted, I think, was the response from everybody. Like, they basically followed up on a lot of stuff that came before. Marvel, of course, dominated everything. The big thing that they did is they released a, I think it's a 14-minute special on Disney Plus, which, mind you, was very hard to find, but it had first looks at Moon Knight, She-Hulk, Miss Marvel, some Secret Invasion stuff. So that was very, very cool. So I think that was the big highlight of the day of pretty much everything that they rolled out all day long.
Are you guys as excited as I am about Moon Knight?
Yeah.
No.
Sure.
I'm
excited. Kind of.
I don't know. He's like Batman, but he wears a white costume.
Oh, go fuck yourself with that.
Yeah. He's like
it's
Moon
ridiculous.
Man. He's like Moon Man. He's Moon Man. I guess.
There's no. What is Moon Man? What are you even talking about?
Yeah, he's like Moon Man. The guy who's powered by the cheese from the moon. You know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Pete?
No, he's like
everybody
a werewolf, but he with white. Yeah, he's a guy. He's like, did we say he's like Batman?
You guys read the comics. Like, what the fuck? How did
I've
you
never read
come?
A comic. I don't know how I ended up on this show.
Oh, my God.
And this from this
nonstop accident. This is from Stray Bullet. If you had to live in any pop cultural universe, which one would you want to live in? Feel free to take the DCEU out of the running.
I want to live in a Jesus Christ.
So what are you mad about? Obviously, upcoming Riverdale episode's called Rivervale. I'll be there. I'd love that.
Nope,
that'd be fun.
No way.
Fictional universe to live in. I mean, that's a tough one. A lot of options, a lot of horrifying options.
Yeah. Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, does that count as a fictional universe? That seems pretty nice. You just got to kind of solve some puzzles and occasionally eat hot dogs and stuff. That's easy.
Yeah. You want to live on the ship with the Eternals and Harry Styles. Right,
yes, absolutely. What was the name of the ship? They mentioned it like five times, and even the kid was like, this is a cool ship that you should buy toys of halfway through the movie.
Yeah. What a fun toy. It's a big triangle.
Yeah. Whoa. It's got hallways. Hallways and one or two big rooms.
And like a lot of modern art installations randomly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Great. I think we have
fictional universe. I'm going to throw out. I would live in the Narnia Chronicles of Narnia world. Not all the Christian stuff, obviously, but the jumping into paintings. I'm here for it.
Yeah.
Conversely, I'm actually into the Christian stuff, so I'm just going to go to church.
The fictional universe you want to live in is regular Christian church.
Yep. The Bible.
Cool. Hey, man, let me be your Mr. Tumnus and pull you into it.
That's cool. I could go up to any priest and be like, you're like a Mr. Tubness, right?
He's like, yes. Oh, wow. I've been waiting to be called that my entire life. Please come on Sunday.
With me. Have some Turkish delight. I mean, communion wafers.
Yeah. Wow. Wait, you're Jewish? You're worth 2 points in the Christian conversion rate. That's perfect.
That's great. Let's definitely get point rankings for Jews. That makes
I guess I'll go with any TV show or movie where they have the, you know, eating contest is where I want to live. Like, I want to be the challenge.
That's our world. That's this world. That's the world we're in.
Yeah, that happens every July 4th at Coney Island. You can just go there.
Great.
This is great. Thanks for asking this question. This is from Nelson Martinez. I started the comics of Lock and Key and Deadly Class after listening to your podcast. What are some other shows you guys covered based on comics that you guys also enjoyed and were
Legion. A
good portrayal too? Legion's Legion. A good choice.
Pete shouts before Alex finished answering the question.
Congratulations. The question. That's 2 points.
Thank you.
Yes, you can turn those in for Jews at the end of the show.
Get out of here. That's you. Are you going to be offended about that?
I'm not actually.
We've crossed the cultural lines here.
I don't know how many people have listened to this podcast that we did, but the Doom Patrol was a really good representation.
Don't play with people's emotions.
Yeah, you could just... I don't know if you could search for it. I don't know if
it's available. Yeah, come on. Poor straight bullies. Come on.
We did it on cassette tape and just mailed them to random people. So it's out there. You just got to find it.
You gotta find
it's
it.
Like the Wu-Tang album. We only did one recording.
Exactly. Ooh, we got a question from Pete here. Looking to get into Punisher, what is a good run to check out or Punisher timeline I should follow?
Well, that's... Here's the thing. You got to really, it depends on what you're into. The kind of most recent one that I thought was unbelievable was Jason Aaron, did a really great run, but, there's a lot of fantastic runs. The Punisher Max series with Ennis is legendary. I mean, that's kind of set the bar. So, I would just say, listen to your heart. You know, there's a bunch of Christmas specials where he kills a bunch of people
listen
really beautifully. You know, I mean, it really depends on what you're into. There's a Punisher comic there. So
obviously, Dirty Laundry is a great starting point.
Mm-hmm.
Thomas Jane.
Oh, yeah. And Remender's run. That gets really interesting towards the end in particular. That's a great choice. Let's leave it on that. This is from NR over on YouTube. What are some of your favorite pulp heroes and pulp stories?
Pulp Secret. Is my favorite.
Not a great story, to be honest, but I would throw out there The Spirit.
The Pickle
by Darwin
Adventure
Cook.
Was one of the best.
The Spirit by Darwin Cook. Does that count? Would you say?
Yeah.
It's like
sort of on the edge.
I mean, it's a modern riff as well, but I think it gives a classic feel to it.
I mean, classic, I guess I don't read a lot of classic pulp, but sort of
criminal.
Any of the Brubaker stuff.
Yeah.
There's a book on Brian K. Vaughan's digital comic site, Panel Syndicate, called Friday, that I'm really liking, that is like a sort of teen mystery pulp. That's definitely worth checking out.
They did a bunch of like fun noir, like Marvel books that was like, they did like like a bunch of new, like noir Spider-Man, noir. It was cool. Those I very much enjoyed.
We got a very deep question here from Kevin.
Yes.
If you were to transition to something completely different from what you're doing now, what would your second act or third or eighth be?
Oh, wow.
Interesting. Do you mean as a podcast or as a human?
Yeah, like, I might
I think
just
as a human. I
pack
think
up everything and move to West Philly would be a...
wow, that's a huge change.
Yeah, it's huge.
They have totally different cheesesteaks there. They put the cheese on the bottom instead of the top, you know?
Don't. Yeah. I mess with cheese. That, man. Beautiful.
That's a great question, though. Ben, the border collie, says human sexual dog. I mean, the stories that Pete told me about it.
Pete, that was Pete's what? Second act?
First. Yeah, act. Second act. Second act of nine. And Pete, feel free to list any of the nicknames for any of your friends in any portion of your life as we talk about different acts. Because I feel like Squeeze Box and Too Tall or whatever their names are will
come on, man. It's Chappie the Fish and, the Unseen Vegan Dream.
In terms of transitioning to something else, I would say the one thing that I have never wanted to do is professionally do anything with food. And the reason is because I enjoy cooking. I enjoy reading about food and I enjoy doing stuff, but I don't want to be involved professionally. Like, it's not something that I want to make money on so really? That it gets ruined for me and becomes a job. Because right now it's a release to cook at the end of the day.
That's nice. I mean, I appreciate that. But honestly, my answer was going to be open a bar in a small town. Open a bar in a small town that serves food and just live that.
What kind of food?
You know, like elevated pub food. That's like, hey, I like to cook. I would want to like work on the menu, be up front. I grew up in a small town. I love. You someday want
to
move
would
back.
Would have to be behind the bar, man. What are you talking about? You love.
Yeah, I'd be behind the bar, be in front of the bar, never stop moving.
Yeah.
We got one last one here. This is from Isaac Carter. If you could start another podcast, what would it be about? Well, we've already done Doom Patrol, so
Alex, absolutely trolling. I mean, if we how about let me reframe the question slightly? What's a non-comic or any of our world that we're in right now? Based podcast that we would do.
I would like to do a story podcast with you guys, where we would just kind of share stories and then kind of make fun of each other along the way or afterwards.
Is that what we're doing here? Most of the time.
I mean, let's throw that out there. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
If we did just like solicited a topic from someone.
Yeah, got a topic. And then yeah.
One of us brought a topic each week that the other two didn't know about. And then we're just like, here, we're going to do stories about this.
Yeah.
We'd love it. We've lived enough of life to have stories that are weird.
Weird stories. Great.
All right, and that is it for your audience questions.
Yeah, yeah.
And now we're going to move it over to our next section, which is trivia. And for that, I'm going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right.
Pete LePage.
The part where we give back to the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free dollars in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics Online. Because if you had $25, you go to a comic book shop. And, do we have a person?
We do. Isaac Carter is going to be competing for a trivia this week, so I have invited him into the stream. He should be here any second. For all of you, while we're waiting, hey, there's Isaac. Hello.
Isaac, what's up? Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
All right. Pete, you want to take it away?
Yeah, so today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend Gavin O'Herlihy, R.I.P. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Okay, here we go. Question number one, which comic icon is going to be on Sesame Street? Is it A. Jim Lee, B. Greg Pak, or is it C, Frank Oz? So it's either A, or you could pick B or C.
I'll go with A.
A is correct, sir.
Yes.
Jim nice. Lee, very exciting. Can't wait to check it out. Question number two. Who is being pulled into a Spider-Man trademark battle? Is it A, Doc Ock, B, Miles Morales, or C, just in case? So it's either A, Doc Ock, don't pick it, or it's B, Miles Morales.
I'll take B.
B is correct. All right, here we go. Last one. What DC character is moving to New York City in 2022? Is it A, Black Manta, B, Batman, or C, Margot Kidder? Is it A, don't pick it, or is it B, Batman?
I'll tell you B.
B is correct.
Yes. Wow. Congratulations.
Welcome, Batman.
You have won a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. We will get that right off to you. Now, Isaac, do you have any idea about the secret quiz inside Pete's quiz, or did Kevin call it out here in the comments? Superman 3?
Is it Uncle Buck?
Great movie. Superman. Wish, says the man who created this trivia.
No way of controlling
Superman
it.
Three.
Pete wakes up every morning and he finds the quiz questions in his shoes left by some elves overnight. So that's kind of how it works.
But there was a person whose actual name is Justin Case. I mean, come on, that's comedy gold.
I mean,
right
what
there.
A nightmare. I've
Isaac, congratulations.
That's not even my name.
Thank you so much for coming on. Appreciate it. We'll get
Yeah, great to see you.
All right, there we go. If you'd like to do trivia, I will drop the link into the chat here, or you can check it out on our Twitter feed at Comic Book Live. But in the meantime, comic books, they're coming out. New ones, old ones, all sorts of ones. What are you looking forward to, Pete? Out.
In the meantime, comics, get on board. I'm looking forward to Robin's number one.
Ah, good.
Robin.
Great. Okay. Great. Justin, great. No elaboration.
You know
Justin,
what?
About
he
you?
Doesn't. He doesn't.
I know. It's
week,
still. It's 15 years in. It's still surprising that there's nothing.
I was shocked he didn't say another word, and it happens every time. Robin's number one.
Justin, what about you?
Derek Jeter.
I'm looking forward to Eat the Rich, number four. Mm-hmm. A great comic about. And this isn't spoiling. This is just spoiling the first issue a little bit, but it is the premise. A woman who is meeting her boyfriend's family for the first time.
Oh, it's always
learns
stressful.
That they yes, very stressful. Learns that they eat people at their big parties that they have.
Fucking rich people, man.
Yeah. So that book is very good. Lots of fun twists and turns, and the visual style is really cool. Like that. And I'll give a quick shout out to Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow, number five, which continues to be an excellent run. Great art by Bilkis Evely.
I'm going to give a shout out to Refrigerator Full of Heads, number two from DC Comics. This is a sequel to Bucket Full of Heads about a magical axe.
Basket
Full of Heads. Sorry. Magical axe that after it chops off people's heads, they still stay alive and can still talk. Last issue, they chopped off a shark's head, and the shark just kept on chomping. So it's wild. Plus, it has Tom Fowler art, and I just love his stuff so much. It's great. Yeah. So very excited about that one.
Laughing good time.
Those are all going to be in our Stack podcast, which comes out in the Comic Book Club feed, its own dedicated Stack feed, Wednesdays at 9 a.m. So check it out. And folks, that is it for this week's show. We want to thank our guest, Dave Thomas, for coming on. Check out The Many Lives of Jimmy Layton out in bookstores everywhere right now. Also, we are going to have a show next week, guests TBA, so come hang out. It'll be fun. But we have a bunch of other podcasts in the meantime. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, is running. We just put up an episode with Eternals, and we're aiming to have a special episode tonight all about the Spider-Man.
Oh, what'd you guys think of Eternals?
Hold on. Riverdale After Dark, our Riverdale podcast, is back tonight for a 5-episode event, so check that out. And plenty more podcasts to come. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow. Don't forget to leave us a question or challenge in the iTunes reviews. That's where we take those. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Good night, everybody.
Take care of yourself up there. Let the secrets leak. An occasion of the veil.